Episode 42 of the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast. JB is yet again ruining an introduction to the podcast.
Hi, Tim.
But you're forgiven all sins, JB, to be perfectly honest right now, because you're here.
I am.
You're here. I'm Tim, and that's Phil.
Hi, Tim.
And the reason it's incredible that Phil is here is
JB is here.
JB was married 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Did you technically? I don't know if you deliberately did. Did you postpone your honeymoon just so you could do this podcast?
Pretty much. Yes. Pretty much. Yeah. That's what happened.
It's a great day though, wasn't it?
Oh,
I
was amazed that everybody in the tent stood up, clapped, and half of them wept when I made my speech.
Yeah, those roses and women's knickers being thrown at you. Yeah,
it was you crying that set us all off, Jay.
I just basically performed a comedy set. I mean, that's all I did. It's all about me.
It was beautiful. It was lovely. Anyway, so we're here for the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, where we will be... there's no rugby so much to speak of. We're not going to focus on the rugby that's going on. There are some World Cup qualification games and the like, but we just thought we'd do some off-season stuff. We've never done a rugby off-season, so we're learning on the job here, but we think we've got some stuff you'll quite like, including some possible contenders for Phil's club to be in the fan free agency. We've got a short man, Pee Wee 15, as well. In fact, let's start there.
Why not?
Let's start on the Pee Wee 15. Now, this is something which was brought up a few weeks ago during the England International Series, and who threw the accusation at Carl Eastman that he was too small?
It was a Telegraph, Daily Telegraph writer.
Yeah, yeah. Nonsense.
I couldn't tell you which one it was, but he rated the players and he gave Kyle Eastman 2 out of 10, which it was nonsense. It was, I don't know, just kind of, I don't know, bullying.
Bullying?
Yeah, it was misplaced, nonsensical madness.
And said, accused Kyle Eastman of being too small to play top flight
rugby. Because, if you're too small, that doesn't necessarily mean you're out of position. I mean, the two things aren't really correlated.
Yeah.
If he was being run over and over again, well, then he is too small.
Yeah.
But that isn't the situation.
That didn't happen, yeah.
Exactly.
And he had Nonu and Fetikoa running at him, and he made his tackles.
Yep.
And
it was lazy writing, actually.
He got other stuff wrong, and he was out of position, and that kind of stuff that we've already discussed. But yeah, to say he was too small, it's not right.
And it's a kind of argument that should have been left back in the 90s when Neil Back emerged. Because he broke the mould of open side flankers and led the way for a lot of people who followed. And now you look at the shape of open side flankers, and Neil Back was kind of responsible for that.
Yeah, well, we did pass that round on our, because obviously before we do this, we have a little WhatsApp group and we do say that. And I looked at Neil Back. Neil Back was 5'11".
I've got him down as 5'10" on here, but I've met him in real life and he's not a big guy.
Is he wearing platforms? Didn't you leave him outside a club or something?
Yeah, we have mentioned that story.
Oh, yeah.
We have mentioned that story.
You
before.
Promised you'd get him into something.
Neil,
when the bouncers or whatever it was, some didn't recognise him.
It was German markets in Leeds.
That's
about 6 years ago.
When he was coaching with Andy Kay in the Leeds setup.
Yeah, when he was at Leeds.
You promised him you'd go and sort it out and get him in.
Yeah, and I was so drunk that I wandered off and left him there. But two of my friends were also queuing up outside. And they said he waited for 10-15 minutes at the door for me to come back with a bouncer who knew rugby. And then after 10 or 15 minutes, just slowly walked to the back of the queue and accepted his fate.
No!
Sorry, Neil.
World Cup winning Neil.
And in spite of that, we know that he still listens to the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast because he tweets us.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops.
So Neil.
We do like Neil back. He's definitely our favourite World Cup winning seven.
Yeah.
But I thought we left this argument in the 90s. So
yes,
just to prove
agreed.
That point, we're going to shove it back down that Telegraph journalist's, in inverted commas, throat. And
sure
prove to him that there are some fine peewee rugby players. They're small man 15.
Yeah.
Okay. Shall we go with number one? Because I'm sure we've all got the same number one.
Yes.
Shall we say it at the same time? 1, 2, 3.
Thomas
Domingo. Done.
Yeah. 5'8", I've got him down.
Yeah, 5'8", 110 kg.
Yeah.
And a big man.
An exceptional scrimmager as well, technical scrimmager.
Yeah. Mm. I've also got Adrian Olian. Have you ever heard of him?
I'm not sure how it's spelled.
I'll spell it. Oh, Christ, what's going to happen then? Just fell off my chair. Literally fell off my chair. He plays for Clermont, or used to. And it's spelled Oleon. And he's about 5'8", 5'9", as well. And yeah, they both play at Clermont, which is amazing.
But they're the same wide, right?
Same weight, yeah.
I think they are, yeah. I think they reckoned, well, it worked for Domingo. We'll get a few other short guys.
Tight heads even harder to find small guys, isn't it?
I've got one. I thought Nicola Mass was quite short, but
yeah,
he's 5'11", so...
Yeah, no, he's quite short for international props, even.
Chris Budgeon.
Chris Budgeon
is the one, yeah.
And Thomas Domingo.
5'8 or 5'9.
110 kg. Chris Budgeon, 130.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
He was an amazing bloke as well.
Yes, yeah, definitely. He was an army boy, wasn't he? New Zealand army boy.
Yeah. Oh, was he?
Yeah, and came across and played for Exeter for...
Northampton first.
Northampton, then Exeter.
Yeah. Who have you got a hooker?
Can I just say before we start this, I didn't manage to find out what position he played because it was so long ago. But I do know, as far as I know, the shortest man to play international rugby, Jacques Farrou.
It's played scrum half.
5'4".
I've got 5'3". His Wikipedia, it's 5'3".
Well, if you know what position he is, I've probably ruined your...
I've got loads of other scrum halves.
All right, so anyway, hooker.
Go on. There is a shorter hooker, but I've gone with this guy because I like him more.
I've gone for Lee Mears.
Oh, brilliant.
Oh, that's a good one.
How tall is Lee Mears?
He's down as 5'9", but I saw it as 5'8" somewhere. So yeah, about that.
Well, my guy is 5'9".
Who's that?
And he was described in a final as 5 foot by 5 foot by 5 foot.
The cubic rugby player.
Yeah. Let's see if you can guess who he is. He is of Polynesian descent.
Okay.
And Ireland. Tony Leota.
Yes, Trevor Leota.
Yes, I forgot about him.
He was famously assigned a round-the-clock minder by Wasps management in order that he could be prevented from indulging in his passion for buckets of KFC. That is not just a Wikipedia fact. That's actually referenced in the Evening Standard.
Wow.
So, beat that.
That's special. That we'll stick him in.
Yeah, definitely.
Second rows then. Now, this is surely this is the most difficult.
There's a really weird one floating around from Ospreys. Have you seen this guy?
No.
I've deleted his name because I've never really heard of him, but he's listed as 6 foot.
6 foot dead?
6 foot, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. If you look him up, you'll find him.
We're talking about a school rugby team.
No. There's a picture of him in his Osprey stash, and he looks big. And even the guy... one of the commentary bits is less than 6 foot, but we think he's about 6'3". So I can't remember his name though.
The shortest international rugby player in second row I've seen was, well, Chabal, when he played for a couple of years for France. He's 6'3".
Yeah.
But I think we should definitely have former Leicester, Bath and Exeter second row Peter Short.
Oh, how dare you! I've got Peter Short and I've got Peter Small.
Have you got Peter?
I've got Peter Short from Exeter. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
And I've also got Peter Small, who's from Pontefract and played for Bradford Bulls at 6'3".
Very good.
Very good.
Peter Short's 6'5 and 19 and a half stone. He'd look kind of out of place in this team.
Any other second rows, Tim?
No.
Let me see if I can find the Ospreys fella.
Well, let's open it up to Twitter.
Yeah.
There must be someone else.
Second rows is the most challenging one to come up with. So if you can remember a strangely short second row at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, please, and for any other position for that matter.
Yeah.
And while JB's trying to find that, we'll move on to back row then.
Well, Neil Back has to be
Neil
there.
Back is
does
our,
it have to be?
Well, yeah, he was kind of the original one to break the mould. I think even if there are players that are smaller than him,
yeah,
I think he goes in and probably captains the team unless
yes.
Well, but maybe number 8. I reckon we'll all have the same one.
Yeah.
No.
All right, I reckon I've got the same one as Phil then. So
I think you have.
1, 2, 3. Kabamba Floors.
Oh, Kabamba Floors.
I had Kabamba Floors as a 6 rather than an 8.
Okay, fair enough.
I think it's Stefan Armitage.
Yeah, Stefan Armitage is 8.
Oh, okay, Kabamba Floors. Well, you had Kabamba Floors in your 15.
Yes.
What is he, 5'8", 5'9"?
5'9". And
rapid.
Only 89 kg.
Yeah. To be
really,
now you compare that to the average height
like
and weight
14
of
14 and a bit of stone.
Yeah, you compare that to the average height and weight of a South African back rower. That is like
that's like
4 stone.
That's
lighter.
One third of a South African back rower.
Wow. all right, well there you go. We've got Stefan Armitage, Kabamba Floors, Neil Back, back row.
Now, I
is there anyone else that can maybe squeeze in?
I thought Heinrich Brousseau was but he's
actually bigger than you think,
isn't
he?
Yeah, he's 5'11 and a 16 and a half stone. So he's just small for a South African back rower.
Yeah. Scrum half then, here we go. Go on, JB.
Well, I've got two actually. I've got Jack Thoreau, 5'3", and I've also got the Japanese fellow who plays for Stade Francais.
Atsushi Hiwasa.
That's the boy.
He's 5'5". Oh. I've got him down. He had like a 3-month trial at Stade Francais.
Oh, that's even smaller than Peter Stringer, who was my one.
Yeah, he's 5'7".
Yeah.
Is it like 11 and a bit of stone?
Yeah, really, really light.
Morgan Parra is bigger than I thought.
Yeah, he's 5'10", 5'11",
yeah.
Something like that. Yeah.
He looks
he's,
tiny.
He's light. He's
very, very slim.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
He's pretty teeny. Like a lot of people would... It's a bit like looking at Freddie Burns, you go... You can't play rugby.
Yeah.
You'll get broken. So, who are we going for at 9?
I quite... You're an old guy, the smallest man ever
Jack
played.
Farouk.
He's Jack Farouk, 5'3", smallest international rugby player ever.
He's an interesting character, actually.
Is he?
Yes, he is. He likes falling out with people. I think he won a Grand Slam as captain of the French team. So
he's got some pedigree.
Yeah, real pedigree. He then was manager of Grenoble. He lost a game... Now, he's manager of Grenoble. They lost a final of some sort, and he accused the match had been fixed. He then left rugby union, and he went over to rugby league and ran the PSG side. Remember them?
Yeah,
just
I do.
Stopped full of Australians.
Yeah.
And then suddenly died.
Mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
It was
2 years.
Yeah, I had a Salford season ticket for a year or
nice.
Two.
Nice.
When I was younger.
And then suddenly died in his mid-50s. So lived fast and short. Literally.
Live short, died short. there you go. Well done. You're in at 9. 10.
I've gone with one of my favourite all-time players. All-time players. He's not the shortest I could find. I could find two or three shorts, but I want him in the team. Thomas Castagnet.
Yeah. How tall was he? 5'8"?
5'9".
5'9". Yeah, great player.
This tells you a story about the size of Premiership players. There was a player called Ryan Davis. Well, there is a player called Ryan Davis, plays for Bristol.
And Bath, the next to previously. Yeah.
That's the boy. And he was listed as the shortest player in the Premiership. But he's 5'10". In the year that he was playing.
That's Wikipedia and someone just having a laugh.
No, this was... Oh, it was Stuart Bourne's.
There you go. You.
I was listening to Stuart Bourne's commentary. It was about 3 or 4 years ago when he's playing for Bath. And they said, oh, he's the shortest player in the Premiership. I was like, how short is he? So I looked him up, and...
That's a good point, because it's just made me Google Stuart Barnes, and he's...
Oh, yeah, he's a tiny
He's 5'6".
Yeah. Oh, is he?
Put Stuart Barnes in at 10!
No!
Pee-wee 15. He makes up for it in girth, but not in height.
Thomas Castagnet.
Now, who fills out this? I mean, you played at Championship level, Phil, and I'm thinking maybe Sedgley Tigers might be the same as Premiership teams. Who writes down and says... on a club's website or in the match day programme, the height and weight? Because do you reckon there's just... Luke Charteris, for example, says he's 6'9".
Yeah.
I'm telling you, he's 7 foot. No, I'm not... I'm not even saying it as a joke. He is 7 foot. I played with him at Bath Uni. The guy is... his shoulder is above my head.
Wow.
He is 7 foot, I'm telling you.
I do know that certainly at our level, it was the players, because we had... a 6'7" scrum half and a 5'1" prop one of the years.
Nice.
So there's going to be official weights and there's going to be
I always give my weight. Yeah. I give my height slightly taller and weight is slightly less. That's just what you do.
Well, it depends. Depending on what shape you're in, you put your weight as
More or less.
Or less.
Yeah. Because I when we were stood next to the Saracens boys, Alex Good and Chris Ashton are not big blokes at all.
No, they're not.
But they're listed as being like 5'11", 6'4", and 14.5, 15 stone. And I'm sure they're not. No. Having stood next to them, and I'm in trainers and they're in boots, Ashton did not seem to be that big.
I think you're 100% right. I don't think they are. I think their stats are enhanced, shall we say.
There is another 10. I like the thought of putting Stuart Barnes in, but that... Do you remember from the World Cup, that little Russian fella?
Oh, yes. That's the other guy.
Yanyushk.
He's 5'4", is he?
5'4".
Do you remember the 2003 World Cup? The Samoan 10, who played against England, was listed as the smallest player in that World Cup. Oh. He was 5'5". Earl Var.
No, don't remember him.
Hmm.
But can we go Stuart Barnes?
I'd like to go Stuart
Barnes. Stuart Barnes is in. Right, wingers.
Ah, you'll like this one.
Yeah, go on.
It's a bit of an old school name. You probably remember him. Paul Sampson.
Yes, I played against him.
Yes, you have, haven't you?
Married to Kirsty Gallagher.
That's the one. Here's some little nuggets of information for you. In the summer of 1996, he won the England Schools 100-metre title with a time of 10.48, beating Dwayne Chambers.
Yeah.
Wow!
Yeah.
Hold on a minute.
Fact!
That's brilliant, Jane.
Thanks. And then he tried out to be a gladiator in 2008 because it was hosted by Kirsty Gallagher, but failed to be selected.
But got selected by her.
That's right.
For her bed.
That's right.
Hell yeah.
He's only 5'7". Not a big bloke at all.
If you had the choice of being being a gladiator or being Kirsty Gallagher's fella, if you were a single man again, you can't answer this. You're just married.
No, I can't.
This could be the shortest marriage in history.
I'd be a gladiator because I'd have several Kirsty Gallagher's.
And all Ricky Johnson's.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Right, so Paul Sampson on one wing.
There's quite a few wingers.
You've played opposite him. You've played directly against him. And you could potentially get in this 15.
Yes, I guess. I certainly could. My stats are pretty similar to Paul Sampson's. My height and weight are, not my 100-metre time. Shane Williams, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Not in the centres. Oh, back three. Okay, fine.
Back three.
So Shane Williams, Paul Sampson, wingers.
Well, Shane Williams.
You've got David Lemmy.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Great player. Someone help me out because I could not remember the guy's name for the life of me. He's an England winger. He was around.
James Short, by the way, could get in.
Yes, he would.
Yeah.
On both counts.
I also looked for a second rose named Lowe, but I couldn't find any. I'm sure there are.
Kieran Lowe for London
Damn
Irish.
Damn it! That's what I wanted. I'm sure it's David something, and he's playing opposite Jonah Lomu. And the story was David versus Goliath, because he played for Bristol.
Is David Reese.
David Reese. How tall was he?
Probably about 5'8", I would just hazard a guess. I don't think he's as small as David Lemmy or some of the other ones.
I also seem to remember Phil Christopher's been small, but when I looked him up, he wasn't. So that's the end of that story.
Good story, bro.
Thanks.
David Lemmy's a good shout.
Other wingers, David Smith of Toulon.
Yeah.
He's 5'8", but like 14 stone.
Stacked.
He's wide boy. Gio Aplon.
Oh, yeah.
5'9" and
very
like
lithe.
12
sort of
stone.
Figure, yeah.
Who have you got in centres?
Well, there's a couple.
Carl Eastman.
Carl Eastman.
There's another Stormers winger called Cheslin Colbay, who's smaller than Gio Aplon, who's like a 20-year-old who's kind of coming through the ranks. And Carlin Isles as well.
Carlin Isles is tiny.
He's 5'8", he's 72 kilograms. He's like 11 stone flat.
Pick us a back line, Phil. Just pick it. Come on.
We'll go with Jay's 9, Stuart Barnes, Kyle Eastman alongside Mike Catt, Shane Williams, Jason Robinson at fullback, and we'll put Romain Toulet, 5'5", on the other wing.
Good work.
Excellent.
Pee-wee 15, proving that you can be little and still be a star player.
I'm not sure it does.
At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, if you've got anyone else you want to suggest or you disagree heavily with anything we've said. Right. We've come up with some stupid ideas before. I don't quite know what to do with this, so brace yourself. This could go down in flames. It could be fantastic. What are you thinking with this, Phil? And JB, you two, leave you alone for 5 minutes and you come up with bonkers ideas like this. Come on,
I think this is an absolutely sensational idea.
How do you explain this, then? Come on.
So we were debating. What were we actually debating?
Who would win?
Well, we were debating making the best rugby team in the world.
Yes.
But only use. Well, I suppose we're debating who is the best player in the world. And you can pick the best prop, you can pick the best second row, you can pick the best back row. But who is the undisputed number one? And so the only way to determine that is to do a Jonah Lomu rugby from the PlayStation in the mid-90s style team where all of your team is played
by one player.
Which was obviously, it was Jonah Lomu 1-15.
1-15, yeah.
And it was quite a good team, if you remember.
I've forgotten that they did that.
If you remember playing against that, you had to like unlock it at the end if you won.
How would you go about defeating the Jonah Lomu 15 without using...
You could also get a team of really small, rapid players as well, I remember. There was some cheat. I don't know if it was Thomas... Dominguez or something like that. Or there was another way of getting it. Or it was a cheat, maybe.
Thomas Dominguez.
You could have Domingo. A tiny...
No.
Christoph
Dominici.
Something like that.
It's exactly where this conversation goes. A team of Thomas Dominguez isn't the way forward, I don't think.
Unless you're playing against a team of...
Well...
Peter Stringers.
I don't know. So what you're basically saying is if you picked one player...
Yeah. 1 to 15.
1 to 15. Which player would win?
Yes.
That's a brilliant. All right, I see it a bit more, and that's an interesting one because I think Thomas Domingo. He's a sort of modern.
Yeah.
To move the conversation on from, like, you've got John Olomou, this massive man mountain, rapid, quick, powerful. You've got Thomas Domingo. He's quick.
Mm-hmm.
He's athletic mm-hmm. for a prop. He's powerful. What I would say is you put those two teams together. Yeah, if John Olomou's team can get the ball, they will smash them to bits. But would Thomas Domingo...
Well,
let the 15 of Thomas Domingo's let them get the ball?
Can I just throw this little wrinkle into the whole equation, which is... When they scrimmage, and invariably the team of Peter Stringer's or whoever we've got are going backwards to the team of Thomas Domingo's.
At a rate of knots.
At a rate of knots. Well, there's
penalty.
Well, it's going to be penalty. It's going to be yellow card. But it's not going to be uncontested because you have your front row replacements. There's 15 of them. You don't have to nominate, like...
23 Peter
Stringer's. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They would just go through them until the game was over. In fact, the Domingos would be throwing the ball on the floor.
Yeah, they'd be incentivised to drop it,
yeah.
to knock on every...
And by the way, under my new rules to eliminate the knock-on, a deliberate knock-on would result in a yellow card to
the Domingo team.
So it makes sense.
But I think it's a really interesting question because... As well as debating players, you're also debating the game of rugby because you look back at that exhibition pair of matches that happened in the 90s between when rugby was turning professional between Bath Rugby and Wigan Warriors, Rugby League, Rugby Union. And the Bath, I mean, Wigan won that technically with Jason Robinson in the side. Mm-hmm. But really, you'd have to say Bath would have won it had they bothered to scrummage your line out. They just let it all uncontested because it would have been a bloodbath.
Excuse the pun.
Well,
the only problem with this is
it's like scrummaging. How big a part of the game is scrummaging?
Well, it usually ends up with Phil deciding that Manu Tuilagi is going to be the best 15. Now, I don't disagree that he'd be up there, but that also is like saying Manu Tuilagi is the best player in the world. That is what you've come up with.
No, it's not just. It's not purely saying
you
he's the best
player in
the world.
You can fit him into the most number of positions.
Yes, that's
yeah, yeah.
That's
but
where
the argument originally started with who is the best player in the world, and how do we decipher that? Well, we want a team of 50. So from that, you get Manu Tuilagi to be the best player in the world,
which probably. But then a team of Manu Tuilagi's could potentially be beaten by a team of.
I know
a team of Owen Franks because they could just every time Manu Tuilagi restarts to them, they drop the ball. It's a scrum.
I think
they get
the
Manu Tuilagi
sent
to the bin.
I've got the answer. It's a team of shock britzers.
Hmm.
They can throw. They can scrummage. They can run.
Hmm.
They probably could lift, and that actually makes shock Brits the best player in the world.
But then I still think you have the problem where a team of international tight head props. Could be a team of sharp Brits.
Well, this is where I think it's brilliant because I guess if you want to step back from it, it's a question of how important is rugby intelligence and pace and power and things, and how important is scrummaging and mauling,
rucking.
Yeah.
Where is the balance? Because I think if you take a player that is the quickest, most powerful, but cannot ruck, cannot maul, cannot scrummage, they're going to lose a game of rugby.
George
and that's
North.
What I love about rugby.
Yes. Yeah. And it probably, you're right, it probably demonstrates just the different types of players that are required to play it.
But then 15 George North is a terrifying prospect.
Yes. Isn't it? I'm not sure if he can pass. I've seen him play at centre. He's good at it, actually.
Yeah.
So who is your 15?
I still think I'd go for Manu Tuilagi as my 15. Because I reckon he's like 18 and a half stone. I reckon with a few weeks of scrimmage practice, he could probably do a job. He could get by.
See, I'd go for Shock Brits.
Would you?
Team of Shulks.
Who's a really quick, athletic number eight?
Oh, by the way, imagine the blitz.
Someone like Tom Croft or PSBs.
No, not PSBs. That'd be a disaster.
Yeah, no, not PSBs.
Stefan Armitage. I wonder what 15 Stefan Armitages would do.
He's a bit light, you know.
He'd slot him in at prop nicely.
Yeah.
He looks like a prop, but only...
Line out, you'd probably avoid. You'd probably keep the ball in play.
Mm. Yeah, definitely avoid the line.
Yeah, what you don't want is a team of line-out operators. That'd be awful to watch. Team of Gaskells.
Gaskell's got some gas, though.
Yeah, he's got gas, actually.
I think I would... If there was a quick, stocky, intelligent ball-playing back row, I'd probably go with them.
Team of JBs.
What about someone like Sean O'Brien?
Oh, that's interesting.
Because he's got some pace. He's strong as a tank, as
he can
a tall tank.
Run a line.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's actually got surprisingly good hands for a big boy.
I'm going Sean O'Brien. I like that. He wouldn't be pushed back at scrum time, and he'd make his tackles in D. And he'd probably just win. It would be a very boring game plan.
Chuck it up.
It would not
choke
be
tackle.
It would not be pretty.
And short bits to me, because I'll tell you the other reason as well. The blitz defence. He's the one who rushes off. Imagine him just rushing up.
Little chip over the top, though. But then he's good at fielding balls.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think I win that one.
I'd quite like to see as well Fofana. Now, I think he's a bit too light, but just his...
A bit too light.
Light for the scrummaging, but if you can somehow avoid the scrummaging...
Play rugby league.
Yes, 15 for Fofana, or 13 for Fofana, make a hell of a rugby league team.
Mm.
I'd love to see 15 Danny Cares playing. That'd be electric.
Quick ball to quick ball.
Oh, they'd just argue. They'd all argue with each other.
Oh, that'd be good. dear me.
We must have missed some as well.
We must have. So currently, the best we've come up with is we've got a team of Sean O'Briens taking on a team of Shout Britches taking on a team of Manu Tuilagi's.
I think... Falau as well.
Who'd be your least fun to watch then?
A team of...
2 second rules.
Thomas Waldrums.
A team of you and Murray's would be pretty dire.
Oh.
Yeah.
A team of Ivy and Lewis Roberts.
That'd be awesome. They'd fill the field.
Or a team of James Hudson's.
They would not want to do any rucking. They'd just be going, kicking it out for line out time.
Looking at
I don't care if I'm outside the 22. I'm kicking it straight to touch. I want another line out.
Line out.
Every one of them pointing at the ruck. God!
Oh, brilliant. Oh, I'm trying to think. There must be more.
Send them on Twitter.
Yeah, dude. Yes. That's a good one. I want to come back to this.
Yes.
I'm sorry I doubted you. I'm sorry. This is possibly my favourite talking point ever, because it's insane.
And then when we get 10 good ones, we'll have a tournament.
Yes.
Oh, please, EA Sports, can you just do this so we can settle this once and for all?
Why don't we buy the EA Sports rugby game and find out ourselves?
No, we don't want EA Sports. We want some, like, you know, the Russian scientists who in the 70s and 80s were looking at kind of genetically altering their athletes. We want those guys to take some samples.
Where are those guys now?
From the players. Create
a little biopsy from different players.
A couple of Victor Contes.
Create some clones, and then we can do it properly.
Yeah.
Kyle Eastman's would be pretty good. He's got hands, gas, he's strong.
You've got to start with the scrummage and work backwards.
Yeah, it all comes down to that's the problem.
I wonder if one year from now we'll be saying 15 Sam Burgesses, because they say in rugby league he's a complete athlete, 6'5", runs with gas.
He's incredible.
Got hands, can kick.
I hope he is as good as everyone says he is. I hope he is.
It could be a huge letdown.
I hope he's
it?
Amazing at 8 as well. It'd just be so good to watch.
Oh, there's so many. Oh, who? All right, one, you've got to pick. You've got to put your teams forward, because I want to talk about this again next time. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. We'll keep this going until the next podcast, which will be without JB.
Yep. I'm actually on honeymoon. I might phone in, Skype in or something. Probably won't be very...
You sound ecstatic at your honeymoon. The whole tone's just dropped.
Yeah. Well,
where are you going? Is it a rugby-playing country?
Italy.
Oh, nice.
Mm. Yeah. Probably
do a bit of pre-season scouting, go and see how Treviso are getting on.
Yeah.
Take your boots with you, just in case you can get a
game.
Just
in case I'm needed. I'm taking a big glass case with boots in and a small hammer, just in case the game breaks out.
Let me get this podcast back on track and move us on to our next topic, because we have plenty more to debate and plenty more to talk about on this one. Right, let's just briefly run the rule over a couple of the clubs that as they prepare for their new season by having a little bit of a club close-up, where we just kind of have a quick status update and see where they're at with the signings and all the rest of it. And we've got Wasps, firstly. So we're going to look at Stash, the signings they've made, and we're going to look at how we think they're going to fare this coming season with what they've got. So Stash, firstly, they changed their kit last year.
They did?
Was it Kukri?
Yes, unfortunately for them.
You're not a fan of Kukri, Phil?
No.
No, we had some Kukri kit at Colman Bay. Was not impressed.
Yeah, Lancaster University when I was there quite a while ago, albeit.
And can I tell you the other thing which I really dislike? Their St George's Day kit. I think it's horrendous.
Oh, yeah, I know the one you mean.
I like that they do it with the red sash.
It's awful.
Oh, it was a bad kit.
Sash, like Miss World. I had to watch a bit of the Wasps game, and it took me, I mean, I know a little bit about rugby, and it took me a good minute or so to work out who the hell was playing. Mm. It was them, and I think the other team were playing in pink. I thought the world has gone mad.
There's Andy Goode modelling the kit.
Wasps a few years ago had it on lockdown when they had the traditional stripes. I don't like the dotted thing.
Oh, I don't mind it. I don't mind
it. Oh, no. I'm all tradition. I want the black and white.
I like that they've got the inverse of the away kit. Oh, look at that with a little paunch on Andy Goode there. Lovely.
He's in good shape, isn't he?
Well, let's talk about the signings they've made then. So we're kind of a bit meh about the kit. Yeah. But the signings, I think they've done some tremendous business. Let's just talk about who they've brought in. James Gaskell.
Good.
It is a good sign, but I mentioned it last week. I think they're strengthening what is already their strongest facet. Yeah,
Nathan Hughes at eight.
Yeah.
Well, second row, I think, was one of their weak links, with the exception of Joe Launchbury.
Agree with that, and they've got rid of Tom Palmer.
And they've got a real line-out captain in James
Gaskell.
Where's
Tom Palmer gone, by the way?
Gloucester. And they've got Bradley Davies.
Bradley Davies, yeah.
Come in from Cardiff, who is a pretty good signing, pretty handy.
Yeah,
handy.
He is a good signing.
Big
yeah.
unit. So I think when you look at that, Launchbury, Davies, Gaskell, and I think they will use Gaskell as a second row and kind of line-out captain.
Is he heavy enough to be a second row? He's not a big boy. Like, no, he's tall and slim.
I suppose if you've got Nathan Hughes, Bradley Davies or Launchbury around you and Ashley Johnson, maybe you can carry him. But he will make a good impression on their line-out, which struggled last year as well. They've also signed in the forwards Lorenzo Cittadini from Treviso, a tight head. 35 Italian caps to his name. Big slice.
Yeah, that's a good signing.
That was an area of need for them, because Jake Cooper-Willie is a promising prospect, but you can't play him week in, week out, every game.
Yeah.
Just on that, Treviso, we mentioned a couple of players last week who've signed for Sale from Treviso. There's a couple of signed for Wasps. Leicester have signed three or four players from Treviso. Is there anyone left in Treviso?
Is this like Southampton, where for whatever reason it is at the moment, everyone thinks that Southampton just have a team of world beaters and everybody else needs them immediately? And if they were really a team of world beaters, surely they'd be doing something a little bit better than what they've done this year.
I can't quite figure it out. I mean, they've got a lot of players with international experience.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
No, you're wrong. Long term, it is good, because then they'll get to blood all the kids.
Hmm.
The other signings for Treviso are Rory Jackson from Glasgow Warriors. They've kind of got a 10 that they can build their future around.
For Wasps.
Yeah. They've got a kind of 10 in Rory Jackson that they can build their sort of gameplay and future around a little bit more.
Yeah.
And Alapati Lia, I don't know how you pronounce it. Luaya, yeah. From Hurricanes. Now, I didn't realise that he's a brother of London Irish's Afisa Trevoranus.
Really?
Yeah, I guess it's a half-brother. But he's got a few Samoan caps. He's 25, 50 matches in Super Rugby for Hurricanes.
And so he's a winger?
He's a winger slash centre.
Oh, so
a huge area of need for them.
Certainly not the winger. I think the centres, they could, if he's a 13, that could be a good move for them. But but wingers, back three, they don't need any more players. They've got a great back. They've got one of the best back threes in the league.
Yeah, they have, actually.
They absolutely have.
Yeah. So I actually think their recruitment's been strong.
Not bad. Could do better. I would have liked to see them get another couple of heavyweight props. And probably another couple of good ball playing centres, or certainly another good ball playing centre.
I think Elliot Daly could be the 13.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I reckon so.
I think Elliot Daly to 13.
Oh, imagine that electric pace inside of the two men with electric pace.
Yeah,
yes.
And outside Joe Simpson with electric pace.
Yeah,
it's very very quick team, isn't it?
They've got some real gas in that.
And then Andy Goode just bringing it all together.
And Nathan Hughes, this will be his first full season in the Premiership.
Yeah,
you could tear up trees at number eight.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think they might actually have built a base for their electric backs. I'd still think, I agree with you, Phil, that front row, I would like to see one more prop. But if I was grading their recruitment, I think they've done top four recruitment in terms of compared to the other teams. I think they've done really well.
Right. Mm.
Yeah. Plug in some gaps.
So do you think, so they finished seventh last year and secured the European Champions Cup place through the playoff with Stanford, say.
Yep.
Do you think they'll improve on that?
No. I think they might have a bit of Sale syndrome, and I think they're going to be put through the grinder in the European Cup, and I think they're probably going to finish outside the top six.
I don't think that squad will hold up well playing Clermont away, Leinster away.
Or how about in the winter?
Yes.
I'm inclined to agree with you a little bit. I'm going to stick my neck out and say they'll finish sixth.
Mm. I think seventh.
Let's briefly, because again, I think this one is probably quite easy to look at. Let's have a look at Quinn's. Well, Quinn's stash, we don't know, but I've not been as excited to see a kit as the Harlequins eclectic colour palette with Adidas.
Yeah, agreed. Adidas in both rugby and football are doing excellent things. I was in 2 weeks ago in the airport coming back from Jay Stag Do, and there was some Adidas kits. I think the German kit and the Bayern Munich kits there. They are lovely, lovely.
They know it's
good. I was almost tempted to pay 90 euros for it.
That Harlequins kit is such a classic.
Yeah. That's going to come out
interestingly,
very good.
With the World Cup, I looked at the Football World Cup long and hard, and I decided what my favourite kits were. And they're all the ones that look like rugby kits, and they're all Nike,
France.
Actually. France's kit. Doesn't that look like a rugby
wonderful.
Kit?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Isn't it beautiful?
It is. Nice.
Australia's, I really like. Okay. It looks like an old Wallaby rugby kit. I really like it. And then, like you say, there's some...
I love the German kit.
German kit is
so efficient.
It's really, really nice.
I'm hopeful that Quinn's, after getting rid of O'Neill's, and London Irish have got O'Neill's this season. I mean, it fits O'Neill's Irish Ireland, but well anyway.
Quinn's are probably the biggest brand in rugby as well, aren't they? Well, English rugby.
English club rugby, I'd say Leicester Tigers.
No. Before I knew anything about rugby, before I started following it, like, say, age 13 and stuff, I still recognise the Quinn's uniform, the Quinn's kit.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's most easily recognisable kit.
Yeah. I knew that was a rugby team. I wouldn't have known Leicester Tigers was a rugby team.
Yeah. So with the kit, we are so excited. We're waiting with bated breath.
Yes.
As for signings, well, two gas men, really.
Yeah.
Marlon Yard, obviously, and Asele Tikaratuma.
Don't know anything about him.
Chiefs, Super Rugby player, 12 tries in 42 appearances.
Yeah. Well, I can say this much. I thought their current selection of wingers were the worst in the Premiership, or among the worst. Because they hardly had any. I mean, they've got one guy to Exeter.
Tom Williams, Sam Smith, Ugo Monier.
Paul Sackey there last year, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't great, no.
Ugo Monier's been off the scene for a while, and he's now their starter.
Not playing because of injury.
Mm.
He's still a good winger, Monier.
I hope he is, because I do like Monier a lot.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of Sackey, the way he plays.
Well, he's retired now.
Right, well, that's good.
they've also got the youngster, Lindsay
Hague,
who is a good player. Yeah, Liveway played a bit of sevens.
Well, they used to play George Lowe on the wing occasionally when he's first coming through, and he looked awesome on the wing.
So they have plugged an area of need. I mean,
they've
got one of the best up-and-coming wingers in.
Yeah.
And they've got a really promising guy from Super Rugby as well. So
they've only got two locks in their squad. I'm just looking at their squad. They've only got Charlie Matthews, the young lad, and George Robson, who's a good, solid Premiership level performer. But that's it. It looks like they need to get...
Bring back Ollie Cohn.
Yeah,
and you look at their back row, and you go a couple of injuries. And
yeah,
Nick Easter
was playing lock last year for periods.
And he's 35, who have been involved in the England age group setups.
They've also front row; they're looking good as well.
They are.
So Joe Marler is obviously he's only 23, but England first choice. They've now got three England hookers, thanks to the...
That's amazing, isn't it? Was it Rob Buchanan, Joe Gray and...
Dave Ward.
How does that work
in
contract negotiations?
Isn't it amazing?
Because you get a call-up, and now you are an England hooker. It doesn't matter if you are or not really an England hooker. Like, but your agent's going to say, he's an England hooker. He needs to be paid like an England hooker.
Yeah.
At
tight end, they've got two England props in Paul Doran-Jones, who is now their third choice, and Kyle Sinclair, who got called up.
Yep.
And Will Collier, who is... But for injury at the end of the last season, allowing Kyle Sinclair to take his place, he could have been on the tour.
Yes, when I saw Kyle Sinclair come in, I think I saw him first time round against Stade Français. I could be completely wrong on this. He just got annihilated. It wasn't fun to watch. But there again, with young props, I think they are going to get annihilated for the first two or three games. So you're going to have to pick your games well, where you want to expose them, get them in.
It must be so difficult if you're a 20-year-old prop and you're used to... You've played rugby for 8-9 years and every single time, the biggest, the strongest, you've been like just bullying people and you come up against a 30-year-old Georgian who's had 12 years in the top 14.
He's had to travel to three different countries to finally get his start in Stade Français and he's going to eat your face.
But that's why I love the Championship. Look at Dan Cole.
Yeah.
And look at the Barrington for Saracens who came through from Jersey.
Yeah.
Matt Parr who came from Nottingham. that's one position where the Championship should be used for props a lot more.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because it's a brilliant place. And in some respects, I think Championship, there are a lot of Championship front rows that would muller Premiership front rows.
I completely agree. You look at the size and weight of the Championship players.
But then
players.
There's a trade-off, isn't it? They would muller them for the first 40 minutes, but what happens when they get
tired? Totally. Yeah. But you chuck a 20-year-old, you think, oh yeah, I'm going to trot to Bedford and I'm going to be the big I am. No, you're not. You're going to get... You're going to have 80 minutes of pain.
You're going to learn some hard lessons doing that.
Yeah. I'm sure Dan Cole would say that about his time at Bedford.
Yes, absolutely.
But no, they're looking strong. I think they've plugged an area of need. I do worry, as you said, about the back five in the scrum.
Yes, definitely. But their backs are definitely looking good now.
Do you see him as a top four? Or do you see him? Because they sort of snuck in the top four.
I do think over the course of the season that Bath are still looking better. Even though Harlequins beat them in that deciding Premiership game, I still think that I will back Bath ahead of them for the top four.
Coming back into this season, Bath are going to be absolutely buzzing because they're going to have Slamming Sam. I can't do it for the life of me. That.
In the row.
they are gradually getting better. They've got young kids playing. Everyone will be inspired because Henson's there for one more year.
they want to give him the send-off he deserves.
Yeah, which he deserves.
Good old
I
Big
think
Gav.
They'll do really, really well next year, and I think they will be in fourth place or above.
Yeah, agree. They won't make the mistake that they did this.
I hope they have their lovely kits.
So yeah, Harlequin's fifth for me.
I think I have to agree. Mm-hmm. I think I have to agree.
We've all pretty much agreed on the four clubs we've done so far. So let's just write it down just for posterity. So we've said that Northampton will definitely be top four, probably top two.
Yep.
We predicted Sale Sharks would be around 8-9.
Yeah, Sale Sharks 8th. London Wasps.
Well, let's go 7th on a majority. 7th. I thought they might sneak into 6th. And you're saying Quinn's 5th.
Yeah.
So that's 4 of our spots taken up.
Mm.
So we'll see you next time. We'll have 2 more clubs that we'll put under the microscope. You can always, again, if you are listening to that and you're an outraged Quinn's fan that thinks Marlin Yard is going to be the little catalyst that drives you from sneaking into the top four to being solidly in the top four, then you tell us at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. But we move from that to something else that we want you to get involved in. Now, what we want is a club for Phil, who is homeless, like the littlest hobo. Man and boy, Sedgley Park Rugby Club. This is the first year where you've not played any rugby. You've had some sabbaticals for studying. You've had injuries, but 6 years of age through to the current day, you have been Sedgley Park from mini rugby. Was it touch rugby when you played mini, or was it full contact?
No, I started at 10 Sedgley. Yeah, and then it was full contact.
Yeah,
right through
to the Championship against Exeter Chiefs and the like back then.
A few years ago.
But now he's going to taste what it's like to be a fan of a team, and which team it is up to you, because you have to pitch why it should be your club. And we've had some brilliant suggestions so far, and Phil will put you on a shortlist if it's good enough, if your pitch is strong enough. Whether it be the brilliant beers you have in your clubhouse, the atmosphere you create, a great chant, some exciting players, or a brilliant director of rugby, or whatever it is. So get in touch and let us know.
Send us
great
your pitch.
So far. Send us your pitch. JB is the man that's kind of refereeing and umpiring this. Phil's the one that makes the decision. So where are we at with this, JB?
Well, I had an application the other week, because we're doing 2 a week, and you know, we can't fit them all in, so we've been trying to get them through in a steady manner. And this one, well, I can tell you, it's a bit ambitious, but I thought it'd be worth discussing. And the reason that I'm going to only discuss it is because Phil's already got a country. He supports England.
A country?
A country, yeah.
That is ambitious.
That's quite ambitious, isn't it? So I received this the other day. Hey, Jonathan. Big fan of the podcast. I've turned on a few of my other rugby friends to it in the States as well. As you may or may not know, rugby in the States is still up and coming. The best place to start is the national team, USA Eagles. It's made up of half domestic-based amateur athletes and half foreign-based professional or semi-pro players.
A fine victory against Canada. Well done on that, by the way.
Yes, indeed.
Splendid hat-trick by Blaine Scully as well.
Ah, really?
Yeah.
But they have some good clubs, and it seems to be most of the clubs are kind of San Francisco, LA, Glendale is in LA. Golden Gate's obviously Sammy Manoa's club. Washington State as well is fairly big for rugby. West Coast based.
Seattle, that's in Washington State.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And Seattle Saracens recently announced that they're the latest little place that they're having. So there's now Seattle Saracens.
Oh, really?
Like there's Hong Kong Saracens and there's various. I think there's eight now. They've got little Saracens kind of clubs that they're kind of taking control of, and I think it's just for their scouting system. So, and I think if you looked at Sammy Manoa, you'd go, "Let's get over there. There's some big old lads who we could get."
Yeah. Agreed. And he just said that. Thank you for discussing Ulster, Exeter, and Bath, but I think maybe USA Eagles should be included. Well, I'm not sure that you are going to support USA Eagles, are you, Phil?
I've always had a bit of a soft spot for them, actually, but I can't possibly switch allegiance from England to USA.
It would be a big step.
In the World Cup next year, I think I will prefer to be supporting England. But well, I do like what they're doing in USA Rugby, and I love their kit.
Yes.
Their kit is outstanding.
They've got some.
Goes for their football kit as well, to be fair.
Well, yeah, I like their football kit as well.
Sorry, American listeners, soccer kit. Your soccer kit is fantastic.
Well, this got me thinking, what actually has American rugby got to offer? Now, I don't know very much about it, other than it's kind of big in San Francisco because of Manoa, who I imagine I'm going to mention over and over again. But I do remember reading a story a few years ago. It's like a double spread in the Times, I think it was. And it was with Nigel Melville, who incidentally has emailed me this week in relation to some questions which I asked. And the reason I remember this story is because it mentioned a guy called Kevin John Roberts. Kevin Roberts is basically a very successful guy who has been in charge of Saatchi & Saatchi and some big firms. But one of his crowning glories, it seems to be, was, and it's mentioned in this article, is that when he was in charge of Pepsi, he wheeled on a Coke dispensing machine and then machine-gunned it. And that's who has been chairman of USA Rugby for the last 2 years.
So they're spending some money getting in some big guns, literally.
Well, this guy is born in Lancaster, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
But seems to be a rugby fan and is a registered New Zealand citizen. So he must know his ex.
Well, can I just say to our American listeners, and we do have some, we do have quite a few, in fact, and good on you for championing rugby. Can I just say, thank God your rugby is not one of the top few sports, because the second the USA decides to go for it in rugby, and this probably goes for soccer as well, particularly rugby, they'll dominate because they've got massive men.
Well, here's the thing, right? Everyone thinks it's going to be USA picking up NFL players or ex-college footballers to play the game. I don't think that this is the case whatsoever.
Do you not reckon?
No.
Players like Carlin Isles isn't a
running back,
not NFL, but he was
on a practice squad for someone.
He was a 100 meter sprinter.
And there's the Saracens guy, Hayden Thomas.
Hayden Smith.
New York Jets, Saracens rugby player.
But he was an Australian. So he's Australian born, basketballer.
Yeah.
Played college basketball in America, and that's when he got into rugby.
Well, Phil has just nailed it. It isn't the
basketball.
It's not the American footballers that we need to worry about. It's the basketball players.
Dan Lyle played basketball.
Dan Lyle. Well, that's the other thing I think of when I think of American rugby, is Dan Lyle dominating from number 8 for Bath.
Imagine Dwight Howard turning his hand to it.
Imagine.
I know he's not a American player, but James Hudson didn't play rugby until he went to university, and he played basketball at a good level.
This is already kind of happening, right? Now, if you want to be a really good American footballer, my advice to you is do not play American football until you've played college basketball. So let me just read you out some names to show you how flexible and how awesome these athletes would be if they came to rugby. Tony Gonzalez, Antonio Gates, Jimmy Graham, Julius Thomas, Brandon Marshall.
That means nothing to most people.
Juice Peppers. That is a list of some of the greatest talents in American football, but it all came from basketball.
Right? Really?
Imagine.
Fact.
Yeah. If those guys start playing, then we've got a problem. We don't have a problem if Tom Brady picks up a rugby ball. Not an issue. I would actually be able to outplay Peyton Manning playing rugby. That isn't a problem. Watch out for basketball players. It's also worth noting there are a load of Americans playing abroad now. Cam Dolan, Sammy Manoa, Chris Wiles, T.T. Lamusatiel. I think that's right.
I think you said exactly how his mum would say it to him. Yeah.
Hayden Smith, Blaine Scully, Pascal Dunn.
Got some talent. Unfortunately, just purely due to the technicality of the fact that Phil was born and raised in England.
Yes.
We're not going to be able to have USA as Phil's club.
Well,
partly as a result of your brilliant report on USA Rugby and your pitch, we do have an affinity with them.
I think
everyone in the world of rugby would will them to be successful, because as soon as they're successful, then I don't know if I'm stereotyping. You can correct us if I'm wrong, American listeners, but I like to get the feeling if America were anywhere near the best in the world, then suddenly they'd take a much greater interest than if they're not.
Watch out, because the All Blacks might get more than they bargained for. The All Blacks are playing in Soldier Field this year against a USA team. That's big. That's very big. Happens to be that America did pretty well back in the day. They've won 2 Olympic gold medals at rugby.
That was in like
really
1910. Oh, yeah, and wasn't it? 1924.
They're currently the reigning Olympic gold medalists.
Because it's not been played since then.
Exactly.
Oh, that's fact. That's outstanding.
They've also got two women's rugby world cups, actual rugby world cups. And it seems to be the American game took a bit of a dive when New Zealand came over, and everyone thought they'd play an experimental game. And the New Zealand boys battered the Americans, I think, over 12 games by 600 odd points.
So when was that?
That was
like the 50s, or
no? That was actually prior to the 2 Olympic gold medals.
Oh, right. So
a lot of people say that is why.
So New Zealand basically did kind of a rugby version of ethnic cleansing in America. They just wiped it out.
Mm.
Pretty much.
So they recovered for the Olympics, but after that, it wasn't really seen again until the 70s. So when they come over this time, let's try not and wipe out American rugby, yeah, lads? Let's just try not to do that.
Do it Harlem Globetrotter style, just win in the last minute with some spectacular play.
I also found this. It's not particularly interesting or relevant.
Great, you're selling it so far, Jay. Go on then, I can't wait for this.
I put this under, I don't know why it's sort of the future, but two members of the Penn State rugby team have been arrested for arson for burning down a soccer shed. I enjoyed that, so...
burning down a soccer shed.
Don't know what a soccer shed is, but I'm glad it's burned.
Oh, dearie me. So I think what we've learned here is that we're willing USA to do well. We're taking a much more avid interest in USA rugby, and maybe we'll keep our eyes on what's going on.
If anyone knows anyone at San Francisco Golden Gates, send us your fan application. Because there's a good chance you might make it. We wouldn't mind doing a podcast from there.
Yeah, that sounds quite tempting, doesn't it?
Or any other?
Have they got any?
Or Glendale Raptors?
Do you reckon they've got any like marketing budget there at San Francisco Golden Gates?
Yeah, a couple of million
That they could just kind of throw behind us.
If USA Rugby want a world renowned rugby podcast to go to Soldier Field to watch the boys, give their full support.
Watch the boys, let the boys play at Soldier Field.
Exactly.
We can but dream. Well, listen, Warren Mullis, keep fighting the good fight and championing rugby in the States. Turn all your rugby pals onto the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, and we're definitely going to take more of an
interest.
But
not your basketball pals. Strictly not your basketball pals.
And we'll see you next time at Rugby Podcast on Twitter.
Bye.